What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Around the World after a short delay. We apologize about last week, but we are back for another episode. Episode 8, we're super excited for this one. And the main reason we're so excited is because soccer is around the corner. We actually have a game on this day that the episode will be posted, Friday, August 6th, which is insane. Prem's opening up. A lot of soccer coming our way. We're super excited. And that's what this episode's about. All it is us two bozos talking soccer. We have some takes for you. We have some predictions, and we're excited to bring it to the table today. Dill, how are you feeling this fine evening?
I'm good, man. Just came back from the Mets game with my dad. Mets won. Got this bucket hat. So
I'm doing well. It's very spicy.
A little tired. Spicy hat. Had to navigate Queens, but you're not a man until you know how to drive through Queens. So I'm feeling good. How about you, man?
You know, I'm chilling, man. You know, our preseason's starting soon, so gear it up for that at Villanova, which is pretty awesome. So exciting times. But yeah, let's get right into it. We got a lot to talk about today, Dill.
Yeah, man. Like you said, it's super exciting. We've been waiting for this day a long time. We're looking forward to having the Prem back. Also, the Bundesliga is coming back with Bayern versus Frankfurt. All the the other top leagues are going to follow. We're super pumped. So what me and Drags did, we thought we would have a little fun today, where we came up with a short list for our preseason World Team of the Year. We did some of this off feel, some of this off all the soccer that we watched, and we also dove into the numbers a little bit. So this isn't going to be a me versus Drags or Drags versus Dylan. We're actually going to collaborate here. We're going to talk through everything, and hopefully by the end of the segment, we'll have our Around the World preseason first 11. So, yeah, we're pretty excited about this. We're going to keep having guests on as well, but we also thought it would be time that we can do some episodes with us and have some fun and get you guys engaged. So,
yeah. Let's kick it off, man. Get to know us, too. And, you know, you mentioned collaboration, and that's the mission here, but I feel like it's going to spark some debate because I feel that I have a good 11 here, and I know you feel like you have a good 11. So I feel like there's going to be some quarrels that we're going to encounter, but you know, we'll see how it goes. This is our first time doing it. So let's kick it off. Yeah. So basically we're just doing a classic 4-3-3 formation. And you know, we have two to three players per each position, I would say, bringing to the table, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to come up with our Around the World best 11, as Dylan said. So you know, Dill, I can kick us off. We can start the fortresses in the back, the goalkeepers.
Yes, the GKU.
Yes, GKU, man. So to start off, you know, it's I wouldn't say this is the least fun position, but it's I feel like a little bit more challenging because I feel like it relies a lot on like the team around you and the defense in front of you. So, you know, for my GK1 in my preseason team, I am choosing Courtois. So the reasoning behind this, I don't have any crazy stats to back it up. This is more of a feel pick for me. And the reason I say this is because I think he was a little bit underrated after last season, I would say. I think he got his props. I think, you know, all throughout Champions League, he was balling out, kept Real Madrid in games throughout the Champions League, which was incredible what he did. And he's always been a top-class keeper. But what I think is going to be different this year to maybe give him the nod over, you know, some of the guys that have been getting it over him is because – one, I think Real Madrid is going to continue where they left off last year, which is super helpful. As I said, I think the goalkeeper position in this team that we're trying to form is relying on the team around that person. So I think Real Madrid is going to be strong, as well as you got to factor in the World Cup. And I think Belgium is one of, you know, the powerhouses in this World Cup, one of the favorites to win it. So I think, and they're going to need Courtois to perform well. So I think for those two reasons, That's why I'm bringing Courtois to the table here.
Yeah, man. And listen, it's hard to argue against the Champions League winner. He stood on his head in that game, as we talked about, I think, over in episode one. He's a world-class goalie. For me, as you said, Drags, you touched on something that I think is very important to this discussion. You talked about how the goalkeeper position can depend on the team around you. So when I was looking through everything and trying to decide who I wanted to nominate for this, I tried to isolate the goalkeeper position. I tried to take the team out of it. Mm. So I went into the numbers a little bit. And one of my, I think, the best stat for goalies is it's called post-shot expected goals minus goals allowed. So basically, how many goals that are expected versus how many goals are actually allowed. So for me, the guy that I'm going to nominate is Mike Maignan. I don't know if I said that right, but he's the French goalie. He plays for AC Milan. And so when we're going to dive into the numbers here, we're looking at he saved 8 goals more than he should have. He basically should have given up 8 more goals. So that, to me, is a very important number, of course. But he's not number one in the world. So you can look, he's number 3. There's a few guys that are higher than him. But what I did then is I isolated how many goals were actually given up. So, for example, number 1 was Manuel Reimann on Bochum. He saved 10.7 goals above expected average. But he ended up conceding 45 goals. So when I'm making this case for Maignan, is he saved 8 more goals than he should have, which is 3rd in European football, but he conceded 21 goals, which is nothing when you compare it to the rest of the top 10. So when I'm looking at him as a guy that's a combination of he's doing better than he should, and at the same time he's keeping the ball out of the net. So that's going to be who I'm gonna bring forth for this, and we can talk about it.
Wow, Dill. I mean, those are some advanced analytics. Did you just run those regressions yourself right on the call, man? Those are some high level analytics you just pulled out.
I did this one. This was one that I when I went through the numbers, I was pretty excited to talk about. But I did this when I was last night when I was preparing for the episode. Well, yeah. just for reference, your guy Courtois, he's still really high. He's number 12 on this list. He's plus 4.9 PSXG, which means he saved essentially 5 goals more than he should have.
Yeah.
And also you could break it down per 90. Maignan's 25. So he saved a quarter of a goal per 90 more, and Courtois saved 0.14. So he saved, you know, just about a tenth more. And Courtois conceded on the year 29, Maignan 21. So listen, I feel like either way you go is a good decision.
The one thing I'm worried about Maignan is his role with France a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
Because like when you talk about like nods for the goalkeeper position in this, like in a team similar to this, like I believe last year's World XI was Donnarumma. Yep. Now we're talking about a guy who's pretty much split time at PSG. No, like he basically, like Pochettino did not name a number one goalkeeper. He split time, but he won the Euros with Italy, got the nod. So like, we're talking about he's going to be, you know, he's going to put up these stats. He's going to be a baller for Milan, but is he going to have, like, I feel like that these are valuable, these stats, but the team around you and success with your team, I feel, in this specific position is pretty important. What do you think about that?
I agree, man. And when we're looking at this, and you mentioned when we were planning this episode out, how you wanted to factor a national team, and in a World Cup year, I think it's completely valid. So my mind jumped to, man, this guy should really be starting over Lloris for France.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately. But
that's the thing. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to happen either. And you know, that's an entirely different discussion. I don't really know how Yuri still has that position as France's first goalkeeper. But listen, that it is what it is. And you're right. I don't know if this winter in Qatar, if he'll be starting. So that's something we got to factor into this decision. I think when you look at it, Courtois won the Champions League. It's kind of tough to argue against that. When you dive into the numbers, while he's not maybe exactly at the level of Magnon. He's still up there. He's still doing really well, and he had the club success. So I don't know. I think it's tough to argue against that.
Yeah. I mean, I would – like, I'm a big Magnon fan. I just want him to get, like, more chances with France, and I want, like, his recognition for what he does, like, maybe for a bigger club. I mean, Milan's a huge club. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, like, some of the powerhouses that are dominating Champions League football now. Mm-hmm. But I just think for right now, I agree with what you just said. I think Courtois is probably a safer bet there.
I think if we do this next year and we look at how AC Milan won Serie A this year, and if they can do that again, and obviously I think this is probably Lloris's last go around with the French team,
right?
Then we can look at a guy like Magnon. But I think right now, you know, going off a body of work, it has to be Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, and I love the shout though. That was good. I like that, how we bring that type of player to this podcast. It's important.
Listen, around the world, we don't miss anybody. We're looking at everything.
Exactly. People don't realize that. okay, let's move on. So starting with our back line, I think it's good. Let's start with our left back.
Yeah.
Let's get that position. So I wouldn't say a frugal position, but maybe a little bit less depth worldwide between, maybe a little bit of diversion between the top tier and some other tiers here. So who I'm bringing is João Cancelo.
Yeah.
And the reason is a little bit like no like hard stats again. And I promise I'm going to sound smart later with some stats on some guys, but not for this one. I think for me, the argument here is just because we saw his development last season and how he kind of took his game to another level with City. Mm. And I only think this season it's just going to keep on going up. I think he's going to be given more freedom. They gave him the number 7 shirt for crying out loud.
That's
like
crazy. Either for a left back.
I know. Nuts. Like, I think just how Pep seems to scheme, like, is he's going to give him more reign to go for it. I think he's going to be playing pretty high with Kyle Walker sitting back even more than he used to.
Yeah.
So when you talk about output at the left back position, from an attacking standpoint, I don't know if you can get much better than João Cancelo. Maybe you can argue Rabo, but I think João Cancelo in that respect, his 1v1 ability, his final product, everything ticks the boxes. You know, he's a little bit, and here's the drawback for Cancelo. Mm-hmm. It's the defensive side. Right, yeah. Like you look at the Community Shield game, got cooked in times by Salah.
Yeah.
And like, that's the drawback of taking a player like that. And you got to look at two-way players at left back. But when you look at just the guy he is, I think he's worth getting a potential nod after hearing who you have to bring to the table.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, I think when we look at the left back position, it's going to be Cancelo. I'll present a nominee, but I think, you know, all things considered, as you mentioned, when you talk about the attacking output from a guy like João Cancelo, it's kind of tough to argue with that. The guy that I went with, and this is really just purely for debate here, but I wanted to try to identify someone that I think could have a breakout year and someone that you could look at in 12 months and say, the guy's called it. So for me, that's Ben Chilwell. And this is definitely, it's an interesting take. Even me personally, I haven't been the biggest Ben Chilwell fan, in my love of soccer, but I really took a deep dive into the numbers for this one. And I promise I didn't do this for every single pick, but for this one, I tried to find a breakout. So when you're looking at a left back, as you mentioned, you want a complete player. You want a guy that can give you offensive output, but also a guy that's going to be dependable on the defensive end. So some numbers that jumped out about Ben Chilwell for me, I ran some numbers. I compared him with other left backs. And so first we're going to look at his progressive passes. So he has 9.65 progressive passes per 90 minutes. So that means when he's getting the ball, he's moving it forward. He's making things happen. I think that's important for a left back. Then you're looking at successful defensive plays per 90 minutes, and he's getting up near 10 successful defensive plays per 90 minutes. So, when you look at all of that, as well as the 3.5 crosses, and he basically has 0.12 expected assists. You're looking at a guy that if he keeps pushing forward and providing all of these different facets of his game and puts it all together, he can be a guy that we look at in 12 months and say, wow, he's really one of the best left backs in the world. But with all that being said, a lot of these numbers are predictive numbers. He was just hurt. Chelsea's going to be a very competitive team at that wing back position. So I think it has to be Cancelo. I think this is one of the easier ones that we're going to talk about. But Ben Chilwell is a guy to keep an eye on. His numbers, his predictive numbers are through the roof. And I think if he stays healthy, he can have a really, really successful season for Chelsea.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, there's some like room here to like kind of give shout outs to players right. that might break out because like, you know, obviously there's some locked positions like that guys that we kind of know are going to be in this team.
Right.
So like we're bringing up, you know, it's an opportunity to get, and this is a great shout because, you know, I on the contrary, I've been a Ben Chilwell fan. I've enjoyed watching him over the past years. And like, you know, the stats that you just mentioned are for sure like eye-opening. And like, if you're like, obviously soccer's more than the stats, but you know, you look at, like we've talked about on the show, you look at teams like Liverpool who drive stats for or use stats to drive their recruiting and it works. So like there's a lot to be said about that. And you know, Ben Chilwell is another guy, you know, breakout season, we'll see. But I agree. I think Cancelo it's a safe option here. I think he's got to be in our team.
100%. Moving on to center back. We each brought two to the table and we can even bring up some other guys. But the first one I'll put forward is Konate for Liverpool. I think firstly at face value, we all have to acknowledge the fact that he's literally lost one game in that kit. I mean, that's just stupid. And that was the Champions League final. And then factoring the national team portion of it, he's going to be, probably playing for France in the winter.
Could be.
A team that's, you know, I think they'd be my favorite to win the World Cup if it happened tomorrow. So you look at all that. And then really when you look at his defensive statistics, I mean, some of these are eye-boggling. So he's won 97% of his defensive duels. I mean, that is ridiculous. He's got a 100% success rate on his recoveries per 90 minutes and he wins 92% of his aerial duels. So, you know, what more do you want from a center back? He's got the numbers, he's got the track record to back it up with the wins at the club level. So I think Konate is a guy we definitely have to look at.
For sure. And like, obviously we need two, so we're both going to bring two, but mm-hmm. so we're, let me stay on the Liverpool because no, I mean, I'm interested because this is going to be a debate because I feel like we can't put two Liverpool center backs here.
I know.
And I have Virgil. So, and this is tough because I feel like we have a little bit of a, you know, a guy that's been there, established the name, the big name, Virgil van Dijk. And then the guy coming on, this like insane prodigy coming on, not even prodigy, this insane baller coming on.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, maybe taking Virgil's spot as, you know, the best center back on that team. I don't know, but okay. Like, so it's tough because, and why we both have two Liverpool center backs is because Liverpool's just defensive output as a team and defensive performances as a team are just far, like one of the best in the world. So you talk about like Virgil van Dijk when he's on the field, 0.68 goals against in 2020 in his career. Like, I mean, come on, like that's just like insane, right? Like, and you know, you look at the season where Virgil was not on the field when he was injured and it seemed like Liverpool was completely out of sorts defensively. And no, Konate wasn't there yet, but it seemed like they were missing a piece. And I feel like he plays a huge role in that defense as a leader, as a, you know, as just a world-class defender in general. So it's tough because I'm leaning a little bit towards the young gun, but like, I feel like, and I want to be bold with these picks. So, you know, and I feel like, okay, if we're going to go back to the World Cup, I feel like, all right, I feel like France is going to have a better World Cup than Netherlands. Right. Does that play into it? Probably. So who knows? I think I might give it to Konate. I don't know. What are you thinking?
It's tough, man. It's tough because what's going through my mind right now is I'm trying to think, if you take one off, how's the team going to do? You know, if you lose Van Dijk and you keep Konate, how's the team going to do?
Yeah.
Vice versa. And honestly, I mean, I guess we don't really know because they've been playing together.
Exactly.
Since Konate arrived. But I guess I think I'm going to lean Konate as well, just purely based off of the fact that he's going to be probably one of their starting center backs. And I feel like a big thing that Virgil provided for them, which is what they were missing when he was hurt and why they didn't do as well, is he had that pace. Where Liverpool, with their gegenpress, they throw everybody at you. They need a sentinel at the back to sweep things up. I think Konate has that as well. I think we saw that in the Champions League final, for example, against like Vinny Jr. I think he basically, they had a dead sprint to a ball and Konate won it. So I guess I will lean Konate on this one. I think it's good to be a little bold.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you factor in the national team. But listen, you could go either way.
I know. Really, it's a toss up, but I agree. Let's be bold. Let's be bold with this team. Yeah. We already have a couple safe options, so we gotta have a bold pick.
I agree.
You can go ahead.
So for the second center back that I will put forward, I will go with Antonio Rudiger. And Rudiger is just a fascinating player at center back. He's got to be one of everyone's favorite defenders to watch, just with his driving runs into the final third and just the way he plays the game. It's really fearless and it's awesome to see. So just some key stats that I think, really highlight the kind of center back that Rudiger is. He made 207 passes into the final third during the last Premier League season. Pretty crazy. Only 5 players in the entire league made more passes into the final third than that. So he's a guy that, weirdly enough, provides you some attacking output, even from a center back position. Another stat that I thought is very encompassing of Antonio Rudiger is his 65.1 successful dribble rate, which was the third best of any player in the Premier League. So, you pair those things together. You look at, he's still a great defender. He's going to be playing for Germany. So and then he's going to a new club at Real Madrid. So that'll be an interesting fit. We'll see how that all plays out. But so Rudiger is the guy that I'll put forward.
Yeah. This one's tough because we both have a guy going to a new club. So yeah. I have De Ligt. And one thing I'll say on Rudiger is, he's moving. I mean, Real Madrid's going to play a back four, and he's moving from a back three as one of the outside center backs to being in a back four system. That's one of my worries with Rudiger, but also we have De Ligt. So De Ligt's a tough one because De Ligt moving to a new club wasn't necessarily getting on the field all the time, injuries at Juventus. So I feel like we haven't seen true De Ligt since Ajax days. So it's really tough. This would be a really bold pick to throw him in his first season in Bayern,
that would be bold,
which is why I'm leaning a little bit more towards Rudiger. However, I still will present a case here. I just think the fit at Bayern is like perfect for him. I really do. I think it couldn't have been a better move. Like, I don't know about both parties. I think Juve lost a big asset, but I think just in terms of De Ligt's career, I think it was a massive big time move. Yeah. And like, I feel like he's a man that doesn't need introduction. Like, I just think, like, we all know the potential that he has. He's a young player. He's a really young player. And he has so much potential, but I just don't, I think it's better to stay on the Rudiger side for this, at least this upcoming season, to see how De Ligt kind of fits. And if he can get back to that form that he was at when he was at Ajax.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree, man. It's tough because we all saw, just as you just mentioned, how he was at Ajax. I mean, like, I don't know how young he was at the time, but he couldn't have been, he couldn't have been older than a teenager, and he was dominant. I mean, it was unbelievable to watch. He was scoring goals on corners. He was just an absolute captain at the back.
I mean, I know.
If he can rediscover that form, there's no way you're keeping him out of this team. But like you said, it's just he's unproven. You know, he didn't have his best season at Juve last year. I think the Bayern move is monumental for him. He's going to go into a system that's really just perfect for him. He'll play next to Upamecano. So it's going to be really exciting to see that. We're going to go Rudiger, I feel like we should consider going Virgil and Konate, as crazy as that is.
You're saying, yeah. I mean,
I feel like I can't sleep at night putting Rudiger over Virgil.
Does that mean you're saying that Liverpool is going to win the quadruple this year? Is that
you know? I can confidently say I don't think they will. I think they're losing Mane is huge for them.
I know.
I think
I really think I agree. Like, I was trying to like keep it, but like, you know what's crazy too? Just we need to make this decision. But you know what's crazy? I was thinking like while you're speaking, last like 1 year ago today, probably, if we were making a preseason team for the upcoming, you know, it would be penciled in at center back, Ruben Diaz, and he would have been. He would have been penciled in. Isn't it crazy that like in one season, like, if we're like literally one massive mess up and like a shaky season, like in and out kind of injuries, whatever, one big mess up and he's out. Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, that just shows you like the cutthroat nature.
I know.
Like football at the highest level. I mean, he's definitely a guy that, you know, when we planned this out, he had to be considered. He didn't make the final shortlist, but he crossed both of our minds. It's tough with PFA Player of the Year, Defender of the Year, 2 years ago,
and it's crazy.
It's tough.
But no, I wasn't bringing him to the table. I was just making an observation. We already are struggling. No, yeah. We're already struggling, so there's no way we can bring another piece into this. No, dude, I think we should just go Virgil and Konate. You know, worst comes to worst, we get one out of two.
I just can't, like, I'm really racking my brain, like, of all the other center backs in world football. Like, I'm thinking about Serie A. They lost Koulibaly, they lost Chiellini. I don't think either of those guys make this cut anyways. Going to, like, La Liga, we touched on Rudiger. I don't think Eder Militao is
Alaba. No, I don't think so. He's aging. We talk about Barca, Koundé going there. Who knows? Right.
That's a guy that I thought about, but again, we're talking about the first 11.
We're talking about first 11.
You're not putting Koundé. You're not putting Koundé in there just yet. I mean, we could talk about Harry Maguire really quick.
Oh no.
No, maybe worst 11 we could.
Harry Maguire.
Yeah, this fucking guy, bro. The worst 11.
All right, we're spending way too many time on center backs. We're going
Virgil and Konate.
Yeah, done. Bold, done. All right. Next.
Do you want to go right back?
Yeah, right back. I'll start us off. So right back. So for me, this was tough. There's more depth than left back here. But I really believe in this guy this season, like to kind of put it together on both ends, as we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So Trent Alexander-Arnold is my pick for this year's, best 11. And the reason is, so I'm looking, even, you know, when he was highly scrutinized last season, he was very like, for his defensive ineptness at times, which is valid, very valid. And that's going to be a struggle with this pick because he doesn't really provide that all the time. But when you talk about offensive output, which is kind of why we put Cancelo there, I don't know if you could find a better guy. We're talking about 2021, 2022, 76 chances created, 12 assists. And what goes without saying is just his set piece, like masterclass, just how world-class he is on set pieces and what he provides both from a shooting standpoint and a crossing standpoint, corners, free kicks, anything. Mm-hmm. So just the value you have with Trent as an offensive weapon for Liverpool is something that needs to be noted. So I'm bringing Trent to the table. Who do you got for us?
Oh man, it's tough to argue against Trent. I think I just thought really quickly. I feel like Trent catches some unwarranted strays, as far as like the whole narrative around him. Klopp came out and said like, basically, what the fuck is everyone talking about? How he sucks the defense? Like he's fine. Like he does the job. So I love Trent, and I love how he's actually a center mid that got converted to an outside back.
That's awesome.
Very similar to you, Mr. Dragerson.
Yeah, very similar.
For me, when I think of right back, I think of the dominant force that is Achraf Hakimi. This guy, I mean, he's just the total package. He's got blistering pace. He's nearly unstoppable one-on-one. He can go cut inside and get a shot off on his weak foot, which is quite good. He can take you end line because he's just faster than you. It's as simple as that. And, you know, he's also a solid defender. I was curious, like, what are his defensive numbers looking like? He made 75 tackles, which is pretty good. His goal involvement, he was involved with basically, you know, two goals per two games, which is decent. I don't know, man. This is tough. I think Hakimi is just a dominant right back. But then you look at the numbers, and Trent's numbers are still better. So it's very tough. I think, just purely based off our center back picks here, I might go Hakimi. Also, one thing I'll say about Hakimi, if we're going to talk about national team, he's plays for Morocco, and he's like their entire heart and soul.
Yeah.
And Trent really struggles to just get on the pitch for England. Which is, again, I don't completely understand that. I think he belongs, but
I'll save it because I think we should go Hakimi because I think I agree with the Morocco point, but I also think for PSG, it's important about the team to get these rewards. And I think PSG is going to have a better season. Like, I think Messi's going to come on. I think it's going to be a better season for PSG. And I think that bodes well for Hakimi in order to kind of get more of a spotlight amongst all those stars, but he's just insane at right back. And I feel like he gets overshadowed a little bit. I think that's a great shout for our team. So I will give that one to Hakimi, our right back spot.
Pencil him in.
Penciled in. So we have our back line. So we have Courtois, goalkeeper. We have Cancelo, left back. Konate and Virgil, center backs. And Hakimi, right back. Nice.
That pains me to have two Liverpool.
I know. Jeez.
This is a neutral podcast. We're just looking for the best footballers out there.
And be hearing from all the Liverpool fans out there.
Yes. I know. Yeah. So six.
Yeah.
Six is an interesting position, man, because the six has evolved. Couple guys that we're not even going to talk about. Verratti has mastered the six position, kind of redefined it into this possession-oriented six who gets out, transitions the team from the defensive to the attacking third. It's also a position that, you know, they value the ball winning above the possession. So it's very interesting. So, Drags, what do you have for us?
Well, speaking of ball winning, I have the best ball winner at the sixth position statistically, Conte. So this is tough though. I'm going as a Chilwell pick, bounce back season for Conte this year. Maybe a little bit of a safer bounce back pick, but you look at Chelsea and you look at France. Those boxes are ticked for Conte. You have dominant club, dominant, most likely dominant national team in the World Cup. So those boxes are ticked for Conte. Then you also just look at what he does on the field. He's evolved his game a lot offensively, which is, I thought, is super admirable because he's mastered what it means to be just a guy that's everywhere at the six and just a ball winner and a volume passer. He's mastered that craft. But now he's kind of coming on as more of like getting like late runs into the box, as you're saying, this evolved six maybe. So I think Conte deserves a valid shout here for our six. Mm-hmm. Who do you have for us?
Yeah, man, I think it's tough to argue against Conte. I think only two years ago he was lighting the world on fire.
Exactly.
He would have been penciled into this team, and he still might make it into this team. For me, I'm going to go with Kimmich, Joshua Kimmich of Bayern Munich. This is a guy that when you talk about the six, right, the six is a guy that's kind of the heartbeat of some teams. And I think that really epitomizes Joshua Kimmich perfectly. There's a really great Conte quote out there. Antonio Conte, he said the last time Kimmich lost the ball is when he gave it to his son to play, just pass with him. So I think that's hilarious. But also then you want to dive into the numbers. Bayern Munich are, you know, they win the ball 14% more when Kimmich is just playing. So just the fact that he's on the field, they go from 64% ball winning percentage to 70% ball winning percentage. So this guy not only is winning tackles himself, but he's just that guy that's driving the team on. Quickly, you know, I touched on his passing and how great that is. He's in the 94th percentile for three passes per 90 minutes. He's in the 87th percentile for XA, which is expected assists. And he's in the 98th percentile for passes per 90 minutes. So this guy's on and off the ball. He's making the team go. And he's the heartbeat of, you know, one of the dominant teams, one of the great dynasties in all of sports. So, tough decision, man. I don't know which way we're going to go with this one.
I know. I think I might be maybe a little rash, but I think I might be leaning towards Kimmich just because I think Bayern comparatively is going to have a better season than Chelsea, even though I don't know if Germany's going to do better than France in the World Cup.
Yeah.
But it's tough. It's like literally a toss up, to be honest. It's tough. It's like tough. If you want to go for the underdog comeback story, we go Conte. If we want to go for, you know, just a guy that's been doing it and won't stop doing it for barring an unfortunate injury, of course, which happened to Conte. So it's really tough. It's just really tough. I don't know. Any big point to bring us one decision?
I actually have something that makes the decision harder. I was just going to say.
Oh, good.
How, you know, if we had this conversation 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I think it'd be a little easier to go Kimmich. You'd say, oh, he's better on the ball, but Conte's totally evolved his game. Like he's a total on ball player as well.
I know.
You know, I guess I think I'll also lean Kimmich just the fact that you know, if we're gonna make this team, our 8 and our 10 are gonna be guys that are creating chances, and Kimmich's a guy that's just gonna get them the ball, he's not gonna lose you the ball. And he's just that unquantifiable thing that he has,
like
about
asset. Exactly.
Where he just, you put Kimmich in any team, and like the other 10 guys are like, holy shit, like let's get going.
Exactly.
Just fire about him. So I think I might lean Kimmich as well.
Yeah, sounds good to me. We've reached an agreement here. I would shake your hand virtually, but I can't.
We will in a few days.
Okay. Yeah, we will. All right. So Kimmich as our six. We're moving on to eight. So, you know, we did. So obviously we did share a list to make sure we didn't have the same. So maybe Dill, you want to start us, kick us off with yours, and I'll follow for this one.
Yeah, man. This one, I think, We'll reach an agreement civilly and quickly. It's going to be Kevin De Bruyne. You know, you could have easily said him just as much as I could have. Quite frankly, you know, he's just the best eight in the world right now. You can make the argument that he's the best player in the world. You know, obviously he's not that headline guy, the Ronaldo, Messi, Haaland, Mbappe, but this guy is just a different gravy. Like, this guy is crazy. You know, if you want to dive into the numbers, he creates 3.6 chances per 90 minutes, which is third. That's first in the Prem, actually. So he just makes things happen, and he's that brilliant box to box that he can pick the ball up in his own third and find just a pass that no one else even saw.
Yep.
He can also pick the ball up and dribble three different people on his hip. and just drive the ball forward. He does his job defensively. He is, in my opinion, City. I think he is the key cog that makes that machine go. So Kevin De Bruyne is going to be the guy for me.
People don't realize how fast this guy is, too. Like, every time, he just blows by people. Like, literally, he just blows by people. I don't know if it's because he's just so much smarter than them or if it's just because he's actually fast. And I would love to see, like, how fast he is, like, compared to some of the fast guys. But anyway, I just think he's just insane, of course. So, obviously, I was stuck here. And I'm like, trying to get, you know, someone that could stack up against De Bruyne right now. And I would say my first choice would be Frankie de Jong, but I just don't know where this guy's going to play. So I couldn't say him, unfortunately. And then we have Young Guns. We have Pedri, just tough to bring him in this conversation right now. So where I landed is Bernardo Silva. So we're staying with City. And Bernardo Silva has been like one of my favorite players on City to watch over the years. And maybe it's because I watch them all the time, but it just, the first thing that sticks out to me about Bernardo is his engine. I've never seen a guy that doesn't stop running for 90 minutes. Like, he literally never stops running, which is just like, he's everywhere. He is, I feel like at times he is City's press. He is, you know, the guy that can get on the ball and get you out of tight situations. He does a lot of things that maybe don't get recognized. So now we'll give him some recognition. So when I was diving into it, I was like, what makes this guy, like, why is he just world-class when I'm watching him? So here's a couple stats. Top five in the Prem last season in XG chain. So basically XG is expected goals and essentially is just how, basically all it is just like how, like, often you're contributing to goals, like expected goals, like how much are you getting into the play and how much are you contributing to things that end up being goals. So he's top five in the Prem in that, and also top five in passes into the final third. So not only is this engine that can pick up the ball and distribute, but he's also being dynamic. He can play winger. He can play eight. He can play 10. He can play anywhere, really. So I just want to give him a shout out. We're going to go De Bruyne here, but that's my shout out for Bernardo Silva.
Yeah, man. And it's like, it's tough when you just like, there's only 11 spots. Like, if there's a utility spot, or just like a spot for a guy off the bench, like as much as Kevin De Bruyne is City, Bernardo Silva is as well. I mean, this guy across both, Manchester derbies this year, he ran a combined 16 miles.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's just got a motor that is indescribable. And on top of that, he's got quality just oozing out of his boots. I know. He's a world-class player, man. He's one of the best eights in the world. It's just, he's coming up against KDB, and it's a tough act to follow.
Yeah, insane. So, KDB all the way. So, to fill out our midfield, we're going 10. So, I'll kick us off here. I'm going Lionel Messi. Comeback season for Lionel Messi. And it's weird to say comeback season because he's always been consistently insane, just insane. But guy that doesn't really need introduction, we're talking 6 World Player of the Year, 7 Ballon d'Ors, 6 Euro Golden Boots. I don't need to say anymore, but it's Lionel Messi. Comeback season. I would love to see him. I mean, he has the weapons around him. I would love to see him finally take PSG to a UEFA Champions League. And that's coming from a non-PSG fan. So I'm just a big fan of Lionel Messi. And I think it's his comeback season. And I think he's going to find himself in this team, Lionel Messi, at our 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how do you argue against one of the GOATs of our sport? Yeah. I mean, he passes the eye test. Obviously, he's done things over the years that no one can even quantify. And when you do look at the numbers, he's among the best in Europe. He's got essentially one goal creating action per 90 minutes, which ranks him fourth in Europe across the top 5 leagues. Meaning basically this guy has given you a goal a game, whether it's from, you know, his own boots or whether it's from an assist. So he's brilliant. For me, I had a little fun with this one. I think the 10 positions, really, you know, a unique position. It's the guy that has the entire weight of the team on creating chances, and it can be a lot to deal with. One guy that just stuck out to me, just watching him and then also looking at the numbers, was Nkunku. Nkunku, just a beautiful player, man. On the ball, he's just dynamic. He drives the team forward. Looking into the numbers, he's got a 0.93 goal creating action per 90 minutes. So he's under Messi, but he's in that realm of creating a goal game. He's still quite young. He's 23 years old. He's a 97. So there's a lot of things to like about Nkunku. With all that being said, I think I agree with you. It's going to be a bounce back year for Messi. He had that transitional year. He's still going to be trotting out there with Mbappe and Neymar, and it's going to be just, they're going to be wrecking havoc on everybody. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm with you on this one, with Messi.
Yeah. I mean, safe pick, another safe pick for us. So, okay. We have our midfield filled out. So we have Kimmich at the 6, KDB at the 8, Messi at the 10. Wow. That's awesome. Okay. Now we move into our front three. So let's start off with the 7. So I'm putting, as my 7, I'm putting Mohamed Salah. And really what drove this decision, I mean, you could look at the stats and, you know, obviously Golden Boot winner in the Prem last season. You can look at stats, but what drove this decision for me was, I think Liverpool, you know what I was noticing, like in the Community Shield game, Mohamed Salah was like, seemed like he was at like top form right now, like top fitness. I mean, like top fitness, top form right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is the preseason. And then I was like looking into it and I was like, oh, I mean, he doesn't have a World Cup. He's going to have a whole month off when everyone's playing. Like this guy is just going to be wreaking havoc all over the Prem. I feel like for like these couple months before, and then after the World Cup, he'll be fresh again. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So I just really think he's just going to have an insane statistical season again. So obviously, like, if you want to look at stats, he lives for XG. His XG is just insane. The amount of goal contributions and just like how much he's in the box and creating chances for his team is insane. So,
Salah's the cream of the crop. I was actually listening to a debate on the radio as I was driving home about how big of a factor that is going to be this year. In all of club football, the guys that aren't going to go to the World Cup, so the teams that have less guys going to the World Cup, and that's going to be a really big deal because that's a month and a half, maybe 2 months, I'm not entirely sure, but of guys that are going to be able to train at the club, do some homework, watch some film, get fit, rest up. So I think, you know, you look at how he's going to be already, he's flying in the Community Shield, and then you look at how he's going to have actually a month off and he's going to come back chomping at the bit. I think it's going to have to be Salah. But for my guy at the 7, I went with Sonny, Heung-min Son. I mean, how can you not love this guy?
He's
got to be one of the most likable guys in the sport. Really, a story I love about him is how he was part of the South Korean team that won, I think, the Asian Confederations Cup, and that exempted him from serving the military.
What a story.
Super cool story. But then you're just talking about the footballer, and I mean, come on. I mean, how can you argue against Heung-min Son? Guy had 23 goals last year, 30 direct goal involvements. You break that down at a per 90 rate, you know, that's 0.9 direct goal involvements per 90. I mean, it's ridiculous in the Premier League. Obviously, he's pairing with Kane, and that helps him, but I mean, it's just a top player. I don't think he has quite what it takes to beat Salah in this edition of the team. But just a guy that, you know, he's one of the top wingers in the world, 7-11, whatever you want to call him. You could even play the 9. And just a guy that, you know, I'm really, really excited to see what this Premier League campaign holds for him.
Yeah. I mean, a very much improved Tottenham side as well. Much more depth. Better defensive, like, guys behind him. It'll be, I'm very excited to watch Tottenham this year. I think they had a great, great summer. So yeah. We'll see. And I'm always rooting for Son. How can you not? We're moving on to our 11, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So I don't know if I'm stealing all the thunder here, but and you know, he might not play 11, but he can play anywhere along the front three. It's Mbappe for me. So it's Mbappe that basically owns PSG now. as we've talked about so many times, but it's Kylian Mbappe. I mean, I'm at a loss for words right now. I literally don't know what to say. I mean, we've said so much about all these guys that yeah. I could just literally sit here for probably 30 minutes and read you all the stats that tell you why Mbappe is better than everyone else. So I'm not going to do it, but he is. He will continue to be for many years. So
yeah,
Mbappe at the 11.
It's always going to be Mbappe. 38 goal creating actions. That's the most in Europe. Just this absolute combination of just sheer pace with enough skill and technique. It's almost like sometimes when I see him, I think of a basketball player, how when you get into the post in basketball, you do this move and it doesn't really matter what the defender does because you've practiced this move in the gym so many times. It's unstoppable. Exactly. It's the same thing with Mbappe. I'm thinking back to their Champions League tie with Real Madrid when he had the ball out on the wing and he cuts in and he does a little step over and then he goes through the defender's legs to the near post. Like, that's a rehearsed move. That's unstoppable.
I know.
He's a different breed.
Gravy, mate.
Gotta be Mbappe. For me, just a guy that I thought I could put forth. Another guy, we're talking about the winger position here. We're talking about guys that we want goal scoring chances created by them. So one guy that does that better than most is Vinny Jr. It's been really, really fun to watch him evolve. He's went from this wonder kid that is he ever going to pan out to, arguably, I mean, you got to look at Big Ben's, but anyways, a big part of the Champions League winning team. He had a direct involvement, right, in the game winning goal.
Yep.
Yeah, and on top of all that, he's just so fun to watch. His one-on-one attacking is just it's art, in the soccer form. And I think this is a guy that can continue to grow. I don't think he's done growing at all. I don't think he's anywhere near a ceiling. And I think he's a guy that can one day be considered the best, if not the best, winger in the world. He's just not there yet. He's not at that Mbappe level, but he's a really, really great player. I mean, 0.84 goals, goal creating actions per 90 minutes. That's a huge number. 25 goal creating actions in total. Really exciting guy. Absolutely love him, but he's just not Mbappe.
I know, unfortunately. No, yeah, I don't know if you can be, but by the way, just a little plug in here. When we're talking about Vinny Jr., check out Around the World on Instagram. We had a metric about Vinny Jr. today. As Dylan was talking about, his evolution. Literally, his market value is insane over the last 4 years. Like, it jumped like 30 million every year. Like, right now it's at 100 million. And it was like at 70 million last year. It's insane. So, but like, yeah, his rapid involvement is very impressive. But not yet. So another guy in this winger conversation, I don't know if he's going to play the nine, is Mane. Just wanted to give a little plug in for Mane. Like, he's going to be, he's Bayern's guy now. He's Bayern's guy, like, for goals. Yep. He's their goal scorer.
That's crazy.
And like, he's their goal scorer. He has to be. So we'll see. I mean, he could have a lot of goals this season. Yeah. I mean, if he picks up where Lewa left off, but who knows? Something to watch, but I feel like our picks are good. Salah and Mbappe, like, for the season, I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah.
All right.
And one other thing, Mbappe is going to be the talisman for France. So when we're
factoring
in the international break, the World Cup, I think, I mean, not that he needed it, but it just strengthens Mbappe's
case. I know. Yeah, for sure. So finally, we're at the number nine position. I think the most fun this season because we got moving pieces. Very fun. So I'm going to start by bringing up Karim Benzema. 29 goals in all comps last year. I can't remember the amount of games, probably like around like 33 to 35 games, 29 mm-hmm. goals. again, at a loss for words. I said on a previous episode, when we're talking about like the strikers that have been doing it and will continue to do it over the next couple of years that are maybe aging and have just been doing it. And they're the guys that we think of when we're thinking of nines, like not true number nines. We're thinking of these guys. It's Lewandowski and Benzema. And Benzema just kind of took it to another level last season. Like literally took it to another level. I've literally never seen a guy put like literally, you know, the team, you know, this everyone is saying put the team on your back. I've never seen a guy been able to do that in such a, you know, the sport of soccer that we all love, like literally a sport that's such a team game and it's such a system game. It's such a tactical game. Literally, it seemed like this guy was just doing it himself sometimes. I don't know if you felt the same way watching these games, but yeah. it literally felt like that. And just carrying felt like Real Madrid all the way to a Champions League final. Yeah. And I don't think he's going to stop this year, World Cup year. You know, Real Madrid, maybe their team's aging a little bit, but I don't think they're going anywhere. I think they're going to be competing for a Champions League title again. All of these reasons, 29 goals. I think he could do that again, to be honest with you. I don't think there's any sign of him not. So, got it. I mean, Benzema got to be a shout for this.
Yeah. Yeah, and he would have to be my favorite for the Ballon d'Or, which is going to be handed mm-hmm. out in October. I think if it's anyone else, it's just absolutely foolish.
I know. Has to.
Yeah, like you said, the Champions League run, just one for the ages. I mean, just one. It just,
I know.
Sometimes in sports, things just line up and players just do things that are just, you know, out of this world. And that was Ben's on this Champions League run. It was so fun to watch. And it ended up having me pulling for Real Madrid on this run just to see what heroics he could pull out, you know, in the last minute, what his finishing, his goal scoring.
I know.
He does things like you can't – I wouldn't even think of it. I wouldn't think of it. I'm also not that good, but.
different gravy,
Different gravy. But. On the topic of different gravy, I think we also need to talk about Erling Haaland.
Oh, gosh.
Because this guy is also different gravy. Let me just give you some numbers really quick from his tenure at Borussia Dortmund. 67 appearances, 62 goals. All right. That's just dumb.
Oh, God.
Okay. But then, okay, you know, so strikers can bag goals on penalties, whatever, and boost their numbers, right? Here's his per 90s on non-penalty goals. 0.8. You take out penalties, man. And Haaland's a guy that takes penalties, but take out penalties. He's still scoring just under a goal a game, just from open play. And then this guy, he gets off 3.66 shots per game, which is in the 92nd percentile. This guy's just ripping the ball in that. He can it through the air. He can do it, you know, obviously on the ground. And you know, just another guy that he's kind of unplayable. I mean, both these guys on their day, they're unplayable.
Yeah.
For me, I think Haaland is a great guy for this team because you look at the situation that he's going to be put in, right? And we're predicting this team who's going to be the best 11 in the world for this next upcoming season.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to City, man, and listen, he already was breaking basically every record at a Dortmund team that struggled. They weren't the best team in the league, I can tell you that much.
No.
And now he's going to go to a team where – how do you play Man City? Like, you can't press them because they'll go over the top to Haaland, but you know you can't sit in because KDB and Bernardo Silva will pick you apart with Foden and Mahrez on the wings, and then they're just going to cross it into Haaland on the floor in the air, and he's just going to finish it that way. So I think, you know, Thanos, I think Haaland is inevitable this year. So I don't think we can go any other way.
No, Dale. I mean, no. I'm you're not going to find any arguments here. I mean, you're not like you have eloquently put a case forward. And you have convinced me in this time that it's time to move to the young guns and put Haaland in this team. I mean, I don't even know if you call him a young gun anymore. I mean, he's fucking oh yeah, he's fucking proven. Like he's proven. Like there's no way, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So yeah, I mean, I think Holland. So
it's scary. It's pretty scary to think about this season. I mean, not even this season, just moving forward in general. He could smash records.
I know.
He could smash records.
I know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, there you have it. That's our around the world preseason first 11. Going from goalkeeper up, we have Courtois between the posts, representing the GKU, the goalkeeper union.
Yeah, shout out.
Cancelo, a left back, center back pairing of Konate and Van Dijk. So shout out to all the Liverpool fans. We have Hakimi at right back, Kimmich at the 6, KDB, Kevin De Bruyne at the 8. We have Messi coming for another Ballon d'Or at the 10. Moving to the 7, we have the XG King, Mo Salah. On the other side at the 11 is owner and player, Kylian Mbappe.
And, do it all, Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, GM too. And at the 9, we have the inevitable Erling Haaland. So that's it. That's Thanos, our around the world.
Thanos.
Yeah, Thanos slash Erling Haaland. But, yeah, that's it, man. That's the around the world preseason first 11. You know, not all of these picks will be agreed on to the public, and that's what we're here for. We want to hear your guys' picks, and we want to be able to compare this team now to the team at the end of the season and see how we did, and also debate further, you know, as we go through this really exciting season that we can't wait to get started tomorrow. So for me and Drags, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. We appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. Make sure to keep up with us on social media, on our Instagram at Around the World. We're still working on the YouTube, but that's coming soon. And we look forward to hearing what you guys think. Definitely don't hold your opinions back. But that's all for this week's episode of Around the World, our preseason edition. And we can't wait to catch you next week.